and welcome to episode 5 of the See Me podcast. I'm Emily, and this week, Julia and I are joined by Hannah Donnelly, who shares the process on how to gain a fellowship and also discusses her academic journey up until this point. Congratulations, Hannah, once again.
Hannah is a research fellow and a proleptic lecturer in cell engineering at the University of Glasgow. She completed her PhD with See Me in 2020 and continued here as a postdoc working on bone marrow microenvironment models. This research was published in Nature Communications earlier this year, actually. In 2021, Hannah moved to the Cancer Research UK Scotland Institute, where she took on a PDRA position. And recently, she has returned to See Me with a BBSRC Discovery Fellowship, where she will focus on bioengineering non-animal models of secondary lymphoid organs in vitro.
Hello, Hannah. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Emily?
I'm good, thank you. We're joined with Julia as well. How are you doing, Julia?
I'm doing great. It's lovely, really, really lovely having you here, Hannah, with us.
Okay. Amazing. And I'm personally really excited for this one because I actually hadn't met Hannah until you came back here just now because you've been in See Me before.
Same, yeah. So it's very exciting.
Yeah. And you did a wee introduction talk on how you got here and everything. And it was genuinely one of these ones where I'm like, oh, that was so interesting. I'm so delighted that you're here working here. Then my main question is, a big one, of why science? Why do you enjoy it?
Yeah, so thanks very much. Yeah, it's really good to be back. Why science? I guess kind of how I ended up here is going back to, you know, when I was in school, I was always into science, kind of biology and chemistry. I actually took like textiles at A level as well. It was given she doesn't know what she wants to do a little bit. But I then applied for medicine, but I think my heart wasn't really in it. But I think the reason I did that was because I just didn't really know what jobs were out there, especially not science jobs. So, you know, I'm first generation university in my family, but I'm also like first generation A-levels in my family. So I just didn't really have any idea of like what jobs people do. And, you know, you then automatically, I think, go to those like standard jobs, defined jobs. So I did apply for medicine and I didn't get in. I ended up actually came to Glasgow to do my undergraduate from Liverpool, which was quite funny at the time. A lot of my friends thought I was moving like abroad. So yeah, I came up to Glasgow and then it seems like I've never looked back. Just it's consumed the next 10 years really. So I came and did molecular and cell biology at Glasgow, and it was kind of during that period. I knew I was really enjoying science and biology, and I was starting to kind of get exposed to, you know, what careers you could have, what jobs you could have. And then I was fortunate that in my final year of my undergrad, I got placed with Professor Matt Dalby for my undergraduate honours project. And I kind of just felt like that was everything just resonated with me in bioengineering, the kind of coming together of all these disciplines, the teamwork that's required to execute that sort of science. And like, you know, yes, this underlying current of enjoying science is always, I don't know if you use your degree, but you're kind of driven by curiosity. And then found this area that just really resonated with me. And that was, you know, in a way by chance, getting placed with Matt. And I knew from then that bioengineering was kind of where I wanted to be. I worked for Matt during the summer after I graduated, and I'd actually accepted PhDs in London, decided not to go to them. And I ended up doing a deal with Matt and saying, if I can have a year out and come back and do a PhD, I'll come back and do a PhD. And that's what I did. So
one thing I want to pick up on, something you said, is the fact that you'd accepted PhD, like got the offers of PhDs in London and then made a deal with Matt, that kind of thing. I think that's really interesting and amazing because it's that thing of you never, you know the opportunities that come up and you have to kind of pick and choose. But it's something that in my head, you know, especially with this kind of thing, it's like, I have to say yes to the first thing that's offered to me.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering if you felt that pressure.
Did I feel the pressure? I think during my final year of uni, I felt pressure to secure a PhD if that was what I wanted to do. And I had it in my head, I wanted to leave Glasgow and that I was going to go to London. And the PhD that I'd accepted, I think it just didn't kind of resonate with me as much as, you know, by the end of the year, I just wasn't really feeling it anymore, I think. And I just really enjoyed my time in, we were cell engineering back then. I just enjoyed that so much that it just, I think I'm very much someone who like goes with my gut, and it was just so obvious that like the right thing to do would be to come back here. Probably also massively helped by the fact that I was then facing up to being like, can I afford to live in London a PhD salary? I think that probably, you know, helps make that decision a little bit, but I think it was all kind of gut driven, and it just kind of knew that the project that Matt and I had discussed and the environment and everything just felt kind of right for me. So lucky in a sense to just get randomly matched in that kind of final year.
That's really good. And it's nice to hear that you enjoyed the environment. I think that's something that's massively important and very much a kind of one of the main decisions that at least I looked into. But it's also a thing of congratulations because you've now got a fellowship and you're back in CME. And I think you gave a wee speech the other day about that kind of journey, but I was wondering if you could share that again and the opportunity you've got and how you came to this process of finding, you know, your own leadership element of the research.
Yeah, the whole time that I was doing my PhD and kind of going through postdocs, I think I knew I was going to follow kind of the academic path. Again, something in it just felt kind of right for me. I couldn't really imagine then going into an industry job. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's like I wouldn't be like told to turn up at a certain time, or I don't know. I think I do enjoy, I enjoy the freedom of academia and the flexibility and all of them things. It just kind of felt natural like I was going to pursue this. So just, you know, was always told that what you should do is, you know, you do a postdoc or two and then you apply for a fellowship. So I was like, right, okay, that must be what I should do then. Like, that's what the people are saying. You know, again, I think that probably comes back to this kind of like first generation university. You're just a bit like, okay, like, that's what I have to do. I'll do it. So that is what I did. So I finished my PhD with Matt and Manuel, and then I stayed on as a postdoc with them for a little bit. And I always had it in my head that, you know, then I was going to go and do this like fabulous European postdoc. But that was the time of COVID. So that kind of put a spanner in it, and other things just happen in life, I think, as well, that, you know, change what you want to do. I also met my partner. His job wouldn't let him work around Europe, and I thought he was better than a European job. So so I ended up taking a second postdoc, the CRUK Scotland Institute with Professor Robert Insall. And I think it was a bit of a kind of active side step out of bioengineering, kind of a two-footed jump into a different area. And I think this is kind of something that's been really beneficial for me on this kind of journey towards the fellowship. So I think I knew that if I was going to stay in Glasgow, I needed to do something a bit different. I wanted to go and learn something quite different as well, to see if I could bring that back to bioengineering. So I took this postdoc that was on immune cell migration. There was a little bit of bioengineering in there, just kind of using some microfluidics, but not a lot. So I was in this whole new world of immunology, which is quite a complex world. I was uncomfortable, but I think getting uncomfortable is important for kind of learning those new things. And it was tricky, you know, you start this new postdoc, you think, I'm already an experienced postdoc, and then I'm sitting in group meetings and I'm like, I don't know anything. But it comes with time, you learn. And I think out of that uncomfortableness, you know, it kind of drove me to be like, okay, I can't be like this, I need to learn it, I want to learn it. It was kind of within that period that the ideas for the fellowship really just kind of came to me, and I knew that I was getting ready for that next step. So I was in the CRUK Scotland Institute for about 2 years, and I applied for a BBSRC Discovery Fellowship to come back to the CME. It was successful, which is great.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the actual application process for the fellowship? Because you said it was intense and it was a hard process, and even though you got it first time, it couldn't have been a very easy one.
It's a long and drawn out process often, but the actual writing, you know, you'd probably look at the actual writing and be like, it's not even that long, but it is the kind of prep that has to go into that. So I think when I was preparing to get the fellowship ready, you know, I'd been to a lot of career talks of people talking about fellowships, and often they say you need to be ready 12 months in advance, 6 months in advance, you need to start writing it. In my experience, that's not true, and a lot of the time the calls don't even come out until like several months before, so you would be preempting a call, which is, you know, makes sense for preliminary data. You would, and getting the idea ready, you would fit that to whatever call there was. But the actual writing, you know, you need the information of what the call looks like before you do it. But So I kind of had the idea already and I'd been kind of softly reading around it. I'd shared it with low close friends to be like, is this stupid? And then the call for the BBSRC came out and it was actually Matt again said, I was initially thinking, I've not got time. I've only got 3 months or something. I've not got time to do this. And he was like, you do, just do it. I was like, right, okay, I guess I'll just do it then. So I did it. And it's the preparing to write, I think, is, you know, what takes a long time. I had to do, even though I had been reading about the idea, you know, and kind of preparing that, there was still a lot of reading I had to do. But I do like that part of it, you know, you're kind of pulling together these ideas and bits of science. And like one of my friends said this to me, and I think it's true, he said that at some point you start reading stuff and you're like, I think this is gonna work. All of that kind of getting the science ready and doing the writing, it was a completely different style of writing than I'd ever done before. So you know, I had a lot of support and help from lots of people in the centre, Matt Manuel, some of the mentors that I have as well, who are in completely different fields, which I think is important for that process, to kind of have someone who, because a lot of the time the people judging the fellowship aren't going to be in your field. So kind of got this all written, you have to do all the costings and you have to get people to write letters of support. And that's something I found quite tricky for some kind of maybe more peripheral people, because, you know, you're networking to get them to support you. Ideally, what you would do is get them networks set up much more in advance than when you needed them. So that, you know, it's not a surprise then when you're asking somebody to write a letter at the end of meeting them once, kind of thing. So I found that bit a little bit tricky, but we got there, got it in. And as soon as I'd submitted it, I was a bit mad and I was very tired and it was too soon. But Matt Albee said to me afterwards, he said, what you've got to ask yourself is, did you enjoy the pressure? I was like,
Did you?
I was like, I've not brushed my hair for a week. Like, what are you saying? Now, like, I'm distanced from it. I would say yes. But, like, at the time, it was a bad time to question, I would say. So you submit and then you hear nothing. So I submitted that in May, heard nothing until September. Your application gets peer reviewed by people who are in your field, and you get a score out of six. So it was brutal, you know, and I was so nervous when that came through. I was on holiday and I was like, whole family were looking at me like, but fortunately the peer reviews were good, and it was nice. It was kind of gratifying at that point because you're quite nervous, you know, you've put this little idea that you've had out, and you know, I probably wouldn't have been that confident discussing the idea until that point. You know, I wouldn't have stood up in front of a room and been like, well, this is what I'm gonna do. I kind of needed that like early validation, and unfortunately I got that from the peer review. So you can respond to them comments and then you wait a few months and you either get invited to interview or not, and you get about 3 weeks to prepare for the interview. And that was probably the most intense part of the whole process. So you get 3 weeks to, and you need to organise mock interviews with people in your school or your institute. I think everybody says that, but it really is key. And so I had a couple of mocks. I cried after all of them. They were intense, but everybody, you know, everybody always says these things to you in advance and you don't really imbibe them until it happens to you. Everyone says the mocks are worse than the actual interview, and the mocks are worse than the actual interview because it's people that you know, yeah. It's Manuel with a straight face telling me he doesn't think the hypothesis is correct. But it is good because by the time you get there into the interview, you are a bit more prepared, that kind of ready. But nothing really can, other than doing it before, nothing can prepare you for being in a room with 12 people looking at you on an interview panel. I don't think only four of them speak, the others are just staring at you taking notes. It's quite intense. But in hindsight as well, I probably enjoyed the interview because I came out and I had a good gut feeling about it. I'd say that was the hardest point because that was so far removed from any type of interview I'd ever done before.
And were you successful first time around?
I was successful first time around. I did apply for another fellowship that wasn't successful in, so it's not, you know, as 100% success rate, but that it was the later in the year, so I'd already secured the BBSRC by the time that rejection came. So I was like, I guess it's fine.
That is amazing.
And you mentioned that when you were doing a PhD, CME as an institute was still kind of like cell engineering mostly. So
you have this opportunity, like coming back here and seeing how it has changed and how it has evolved while you were away working for immunology related projects.
Yeah.
So how would you say it's changed from your perspective?
Changed, I think, very much for the better. You know, it really is a unique environment within the UK and probably Europe, where we have this massive centre that really does bring together the biology and the engineering. And I think I've seen it in its previous form, where those two things were not together. You know, I was sterilising samples at one end of campus and carrying them through the streets to go and then use them. So yeah, you know, it's amazing to come back and see, you know, you've the rheometer on one bench and the PCR on the other and all these other like fancy toys, and you do truly just have everything and everyone in one place, which I think is really important. The centre's grown quite a lot since I've come back. You know, you have this massive CDT PhD cohort, which I think has been really good for the centre. Everyone's doing such interesting projects, so varied, everyone's backgrounds are so varied. And then, you know, you have this kind of group of senior and junior lecturers and the PIs, all with different backgrounds and research interests. And I think it does really come together as this cooperative centre where we do all have equal access to all of that equipment and all of those facilities. And I think that really is something quite unique.
We're definitely a very diverse bunch when it comes to our backgrounds and our interests. So it's nice to see that you see a positive change in the centre in the past years.
Yes, yes. And I just actually wanted to ask you a wee bit about the actual science that you do yourself, because I personally found it fascinating.
Thanks. Yeah, so I'm interested in kind of bioengineering models of human tissues and organs, specifically lymphoid tissues, so bone marrow, and now lymph nodes or tonsils, with the aim that we can then use these as kind of replacements for animal models, so all these non-animal technologies. So the vision there really is that we begin to develop these models in a way that can be applied to industry or research to help screen drugs, but ultimately to lead to this better understanding of human disease or human variation, which I think is important and something that really isn't recapitulated by animal models, so that we can begin to develop these better therapies that will be effective in the whole population if we include this human variation early on. So I think that's the drive for me, and it's all kind of rooted in these lymphoid tissues.
That means, I'm assuming, that because we're in CIMI, which is the Centre for the Cellular Microenvironment, you'll be looking at these microenvironments as well.
Exactly, yeah. So I think that's kind of the joy of these, or like the fun of these models for me, is that you have this side that is, you know, it's very driven towards, can we create this model that can be useful? And, you know, that is quite different in a way to, can we also create this model that recapitulates the complexity of human biology, because I think those two things often aren't required at the same time or in the same model. So this kind of second prong of research of like increasing the complexity of those models to uncover mechanisms, or, you know, discovering things about like cells in our bodies and how they like live in their different niches or different microenvironments is really interesting. So PhD work and work with Matt is rooted in the bone marrow microenvironment, so the regulation of stem cells within that, whereas I'm now moving into this kind of lymph node microenvironment, so similar but different.
Amazing. Thank you so much for answering our questions. We have one more kind of wee one that we want to ask at the end, and I know we've had a wee laugh about this before we started, but I was just interested in if you could do a couple of your five word summaries of your career so far.
So I asked some of my friends to help me with this. So I've got a selection. I'm not sure all of these are going to make the final cut.
That's okay.
So mine was driven by curiosity and Diet Coke.
Diet Coke being hyphenated?
Hyphenated.
Yes.
One of my friends said, please refer to my LinkedIn.
Brilliant. I like it.
We will do that.
What else did we get? This bitch, she's serving science.
Nice. I don't know which one's my favorite.
I like the take on getting people to help with that. I like that. It's a new way of doing it, and it works very well. Well, I think then it's just a case of saying I hope you enjoyed this experience.
Thank you so much.
And
thank you so much for joining.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Great conversation.
Yeah, and we are excited that you're back here and for the next few years.
Thank you very much for having me, girls. It's been very good, and good luck with the podcast. It's going so well so far.
Thank you.